County Library. Today's a very rainy June 2nd, a Sunday, and I thought it was a good chance to talk to Mrs. Margaret Edwards. When it's a fine day, both she and I are apt to be outdoors, so a rainy day is a good chance to check out our conversation.
Is this on?
Yeah, Margaret, one of the things I wanted to ask you was how you came to Harford County and how did you name this place?
Well, as you know, I was married to Dr. Philip H. Edwards, who was the principal of City College. He was 24 years older than I and had to retire at 70. I was still what I would consider just a spring chicken, and I was working for the Pratt Library. It seemed to me that because he was gregarious and would be at loose ends in the big city and would probably visit City College too much, that I ought to help him find something that would interest him. And to me, the answer was a farm. Now, I think, to be perfectly honest, that subconsciously I wanted to get back on the farm badly enough that I made myself feel that I was doing him a great deal of good by getting him on a farm. We saw an ad in the paper for this farm that we're on now, and one Sunday morning we drove out to see it. Well, the minute we came up the rise and saw the farm for the first time, with its 100-year-old house with the clapboard siding and the green shingles and the green shutters, I knew that this was where I wanted to be. Doc bought the farm to please me. And when we moved out, I was so happy I hardly knew what to do, and I suddenly discovered that he did not share my enthusiasm. He had been used to 1,000 boys and 102 teachers around him all the time in a big city. He had never lived in the country. And he felt completely isolated. We were 400 yards back from the road with a woods and stream between. And he went to the window one cold winter day, and he sighed and said, "Not a soul in sight." I had visions of restoring the house and improving the farm, of our working happily together over this, when I suddenly decided that to Doc, physical labor was a dirty word. He didn't want to do it. Now, he liked to play tennis. He liked to talk and visit with people. But to get down and lift heavy things and bring them up and nail them and cart off things, he didn't want to do that. And I cried about it for a while because it seemed to me my dreams were being dashed. Then one day, when I was out working by myself, I thought it over. He didn't need to work. He had enough money that he didn't have to make his living that way. He was over 70 years old. He didn't want to work. And to be perfectly honest, the farm was the thing that I wanted. I thought I wanted it for him, but I'm sure I wanted it most for myself. So, after thinking it over, I came in and found him resting, and I said, "Doc, I have solved our problems. I'm not going to cry anymore." I got to thinking that had we not bought the farm, I would be here by myself, even if I had been able to afford the farm. I'd go out and work and come in exhausted with nobody to talk to. Here I come in and I've got a handsome lover, a good conversationalist, a sweetheart, and somebody that would make a good front man. So I'll do the work and you be the front man. Now this worked like a charm, and with it saved our marriage. We were as happy as we could be. I went out and worked and worked, and he was the front man. He entertained the company while I got the dinners. And often I heard him walking over the farm telling them that we had built the fence here, we had just renovated the barn, we were going to dig a well. And I was so happy that he really thought he had participated in this endeavor. I remember in this connection that one morning I was building a chicken house. I had gotten it up to the roof, and I got on a ladder and got up to the roof and was laying the tar paper down when a cow came by and knocked the ladder down. I yelled for Doc, and I discovered he was up in the pine paneled room singing songs in the Methodist hymnal. He had a big bass voice, and he was belting out all these wonderful old hymns and couldn't possibly hear me. The sun got hotter and hotter and hotter, and I thought I would die until lunch came, and he got so hungry that he came to the door to see what had happened to me, and that's the way I got down off of the chicken house.
How did you ever learn to build a fence, though?
I was reared on a farm in Texas. And there I helped milk the cows, and I got interested in the animals, and I knew a little about them, but I never had really had charge of them. But I felt with all this land and this wonderful grass, I needed something to keep the underbrush down, and I certainly didn't want goats. So I got some grade cattle. And I had them for a while, and my butcher called me one day, and he said, "Would you like some registered Hereford cows?" And I said, "Well, certainly, but I couldn't pay for them." He said, "You come up here, I want to show you some." I went up there, and an old man had decided to go into the dairy business, and he threw his registered Herefords on the market and sold them to a man who eventually sold them to a butcher. And they were so beautiful that the butcher simply could not kill them. So he sold them to me at meat prices, and I bought 4 cows and brought them in. And that was the way I started the herd, and have built it up gradually ever since. At first we used artificial insemination, which the cows did not enjoy at all, and then finally I got the herd big enough that I got some wonderful bulls and got going with that.
When you left Pratt Library, though, you had a start in the Hereford cows?
Yes. Oh, I started this before. You see, I continued to work at the library after Doc retired.
Oh, yes.
So I worked, I guess 10 years or more after he retired, until I was old enough to retire and get a pension, you see. So he would meet me at the Greyhound bus and bring me home, and he learned to cook. He finally found that waiting for me to come home hot and tired and mad and begin slamming pans around trying to get dinner was not such a good idea as for him to, if he could cook. He'd never turned the stove on, but he said, after he had gotten into it, that it was quite simple. All you did was just to do what the cookbook said, and it always turned out for him. So when I came home, I told him that when it came to work, if there had just been one thing that he was going to do, it would have been, I would have preferred cooking, because this meant that, and he took great pride in it and was a very good cook. So that solved some of our questions and problems and left me free to work with the cattle after I did get home. But I love the cows, and I have gradually built the herd up, and I think now I have a beautiful herd. Of course, it's small because there aren't over 40 acres in the place, and that limits the number of cattle I can have. I buy hay in order to be able to have room for more cows. I forgot to tell you how the farm got its name. One day, when Doc, shortly after we moved out, it was a cold winter day, and Doc went to the window and looked out, and he sighed and said, "Not a soul in sight." And from that, he said that this place should be named Eddie. This combined his name, Edwards, with how he felt about the place. So it did become _ED-ACHE, Eddie. Now, I told you that we got the, I had started this herd, and when it came down, I needed a bull. I was ready to retire from the Pratt Library after some 30 years of service and finally come to where I could just spend my whole time on the farm. And I asked that I not be given any farewell present. I had contributed so often to people who were retiring, and really the only reason I was glad to contribute to one or two of them was that I was so glad to see them leave. And I felt that was the way probably some of them would feel about me, and I didn't want any hat passed. If they would just let me put on my hat and walk out, they said, okay, okay. So the last morning I was there, I was holding my final meeting with the young adult assistants up in the Munder room. And they said that the secretary had called, it was toward the end of the meeting, and that I was needed very badly in the shipping room. I went down, and here was Ned Merriman, one of the Kingpin Hereford breeders in the state, with a truck. And in the truck was the most beautiful bull calf I almost ever saw, with a blue ribbon around his neck. And all the young adult assistants, not only the ones here at Pratt, but the ones who had used to be at Pratt, who had gone all over the country. Many of them came from New York, from Chicago, from different places. And here they all stood with this beautiful bull that was given to me. Well, needless to say, I was certainly moved and touched. Then I found that they had established a bull naming contest. Each person who had contributed to this wonderful animal was allowed to submit a name for the bull. And I was given the package of names, and some of them were simply wonderful. There was Olay, there was Dovey Gillis, and we were just about decided on Brigham Young when we came to Bully Sol Edwards. Now, that was in the days that Billy Sol Estes was raging, and this was too good to be true. So this was Bully Sol Edwards, and he became the head of the herd for many years until his successors, Pappy and Carleone, had followed him.
Well, that was a very... it was a name to lead you to many other fine names, I know.
Yes, one of the wonders of the one part of the fun of raising them is naming them. Mm-hmm. I don't get them all named, but I have had some very nice ones. Now, I told you the present bull is named Carleone. This is for the Godfather, of course. It just suits him perfectly. Then we have had Lady Chatterley, and usually I have two little steers named Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Sometimes I go political, and some years ago I had two heifers named Lucy Baines and Ladybird. But this year I have two steers, and one is named Sam Irwin and the other is Ulasewicz. One of the little heifers, I thought I had never heard such a wonderful and musical name, and so suited to this little heifer calf, who's as sweet as she can be. So I have named her for the wife of the mayor of San Francisco, and she is Angelina Alioto. And then I have one that really takes advantage of me. She feels that she can push me around and demand feed and this, that, and other. So she is Minnie the Moocher. I had a young steer named Meatball. And then his brother was named Meatball's brother. So, but it is fun to name them, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. But if you look at them as they're born, you think, now, just what would suit this one's personality? And sometimes you name them something, and it doesn't quite fit, so you have to go back and do something that's more suitable.
That's quite a challenge, I would say.
It isn't all fun. In fact, I don't make any money much off these cattle. Sometimes I don't even break even. Sometimes a few hundred dollars. Work myself at the kind of my labor, I'd be broke every year. But it's something that I like to do. And I think one of the secrets of growing old gracefully is to have something that you love to do, that you can devote yourself to, that keeps you busy. And this gets me outdoors. It exercises me. Now, in the winter, I look out some mornings and it's snowing and the wind is howling and I've got to go feed the cattle. And I think, how did I ever paint myself into this country? I get on my Sears and Roebuck ski suit and my boots and my fleece-lined helmet and I face the blizzard and I go out there, and the next thing I know, it's 3 hours later. The barn has been cleaned out, the fresh hay is down, the new calves are bedded down. I've been over in the pasture and fed Carleone and his harem. I've come back, it's noon, I'm starved to death. The blood is pumping through my veins. I'm well and healthy and happy. Well, what if I don't make it? any money. The money has very little to do with this. But I do have moments when you really begin to wonder why in the world you ever did it. One time, and I wonder every summer when the pink eye strikes. Of course, the flies carry the pink eye from one to another. And if you don't doctor them, their eyeballs will burst or something awful will happen. They've got to be doctored. So the ones that have, when I look up and see one looking at me with his eyes all swelled up and watering, we bring them in, put them in the chute, get the heads caught in the vise at the front, get the salve that have, I shoot like a hypodermic, get it in the eyes once a day for 3 days, and this usually cures them. But to get them in that chute and to get that head caught and to get them in there, it's a lot of trouble. But the worst time I ever had was when Carleone took it. Now, he weighs about 1,500 pounds. And I got him in the chute, got him up to put his head in the vise, and his head was so big it wouldn't go in. Well, I don't know what in the world to do, so I thought I would just put iron bars behind him and doctor him that way. The first thing I knew, he had risen like a bird and just floated over the side of the chute. At that 1,500 pounds, just as light as a feather, over the chute, and I thought, what in the world can I do? I thought I'd call the vet, and then I realized it was Saturday and he wouldn't come on the weekend. I say, when I get in trouble like this, I think cow. How would a cow think? So I had a boy here in the ninth grade who was mowing the lawn. I decided to put old Dixie Belle in the chute first and cut her head in. This would block him from the low part of the fence around the chute so that he couldn't get over it. Then he's a glutton for feed, so I put a pan of feed at Dixie Belle's heels. And while he was eating, I got my lariat rope, and before he knew what had happened, I had gotten it around his neck and caught it and lassoed him down to the railroad tie that was a post holding up the chute. I got the boy to come and help me. He held the rope, and I got in front of him and got my salve and got it in his eyes. Then we discovered that he had pulled the rope so tight that I couldn't loosen it. So I had to send the boy to the house for a butcher knife and cut the rope out and got him out. But I did save. He didn't go blind. I still got Carleone, and he sees very well. Then one of the most exciting moments came last Christmas Eve. As I say, the vet doesn't come on weekends, and he doesn't come on holidays. And this was Christmas Eve and Saturday. I went down in the pasture to feed the cows, and I saw my dear old gold cow with a calf's foot sticking out of her ear, which meant a breech birth. And this is a desperate situation. I let her out of the pen where they were over in the pasture, and she ran for the woods, because when they're having a calf, they like to get off by themselves. I could not get her in the barn. I sent for John Brown, my black friend, who always comes to me in emergencies, and together we finally got her over on the other side of the farm and in the barn. Now, I called the vet. Nobody even knew where he was. I remembered that a friend of mine, who was a lab technician at Edgewood Arsenal, said that he had a young vet from Texas who was interested in cattle, and he had told him about mine. And the young fellow had, in an unguarded moment, remarked that he'd like to help me if I ever got in trouble. Well, I called my friend and I said, can you get that vet? I've had it. I've got a problem here. I've got a cow that's going to have a breech birth, and I've got to have a vet. He called back in about 15 minutes and said he's coming. He arrived with a vet friend who does little animals, who does dogs and cats, with my friend Maurice. We went down to the barn, and he asked me to get him a bucket of soapy water, which I did. He rolled up his sleeves, dipped his arms up above the elbows in the soapy water, He got, had me give him a rope, tied the gold cow up, got her head in the stanchion. Then he reached in and got that other leg, only one was sticking out, and tied a rope around the ankles of the calf. Then it was all the three men could do to pull that calf out. The cow, in this, in a case like this, the cow pulls with them. She goes against them, get to help them. And, but it was, it's a very painful thing for her. Now, the problem with the breech birth is that if the calf breathes, he breathes in mucus and chokes himself to death. So at the critical moment, when they get him about half out, he must be pulled out fast and hit the ground. Well, when this one hit the ground, he seemed dead. And the vet got him by the hind legs and shook him. And the other one beat him like you beat a child that's been born. And eventually he opened his eyes. Well, this was a great victory. And we put him down. But his mother had been in such pain she wouldn't lick him. And the cow licks the calf to get the circulation started, just like a doctor spanks a baby. And they have to lick him. It must be, she wouldn't lick him. But we came to the house and had coffee and congratulated ourselves on saving the cow and the calf. You see, the cow would have died too if I hadn't gotten to bed. And they left. I went down there and the calf was shivering and cold and wheezing, and I was discouraged. I got some Q-tips, like you use with babies, and tickled his nose and he sneezed a little, but not enough. And I went back again and I got a gunny sack and I rubbed him and I rubbed him and I rubbed him down. And finally, after an hour or two, I got him up on his knees near his mother's bag and pushed him and held him and got a tit in his mouth. And he sucked it. I got him, she'd move. Then I'd have to bring the calf and drag him across the lot and get him up on those feet. And I'd get him up on the front feet and then the back feet and raise him one at a time like you do a card table and get him moved apart and get him standing. And finally he got a fairly good dinner and it was night. I went down the next morning and he had done his homework. All the tits had been nursed. 2 days later, I let him out of the pen into the barn. He crooked his tail, he stuck it straight out, he ran across that barn, bellowing as he went, and the cows and I were just allowed. We cheered him on. He was a bad bull, there was no question about it. But that, after you go through these things, you are so relieved and happy that... I guess it's kind of like childbirth. The woman, after it's over with and you've got the baby, it doesn't make any difference about the other. And you feel this way about the cows.
Do you have any help in your farm work here?
Until recently, except when I left home, I have done all the work myself. But as I get older, Mabel Brown, my wonderful, wonderful black friend, comes over to help me in the mornings. But before this happened, I'd like to tell you something to show you what kind of a person Mabel is. I was teaching in the library school in the University of Texas a summer or two ago. And while I was there, I heard on the radio and television of the terrific storms that were just racking Maryland. Now, this wasn't Agnes, but it was a bad storm. And people were drowning in Baltimore County. I wrote Mabel to ask her if she had any trouble with the cows. And she wrote back and told me that there was a perfectly torrential rain. They'd just gotten back from a church convention in Virginia, and she came over about 12:30. My telephone was disconnected, so if she got in trouble, she couldn't call. But she went over, and she found that one of the cows was about to have a calf, and she was across this stream, which by now was a raging torrent. She didn't know what to do, so she went home and got John, her husband, and came back. And when they got down to the stream, the calf was floating down the stream. And Mabel jumped in her clothes with that raging stream and pulled that calf out. John took him by the hind legs and shook him and shook him and got the water out of him. They got him in a wheelbarrow and took him to the barn. And Mabel believes in prayer. And she prayed over him and prayed over him.
And he opened his eyes and he got up on his feet, and they named him Miracle. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I thought about so much was, how many people would have jumped in that stream? They would have stood there in their Sunday clothes and said, "Too bad, there goes Ms. Edwards Kay."
Yeah.
But when I have to leave home, I simply call Mabel and say, "Mabel, take over." I know that she would do the cows exactly like I would. She watches them. If one gets sick, she calls a vet. And when I have taught at different places in the summer, I can go with a clear conscience because I know that Mabel is going to do it right. I can absolutely depend on her.
Lucky.